no penalties here. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast with Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manute.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. With Dave Manuk, with Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. We welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on this Saturday morning, talking about some Jets, talking about the Stanley Cup final. It certainly is a scorcher in Winnipeg, and that doesn't even include the hot takes we're about to hand out here over the next couple of hours. Gentlemen, good to see you both on this Saturday morning. Dave sporting a New York Mets hat, if I can see correctly on the screen, and Ezzy repping randomly a Chicago White Sox hat that I did not expect to see you sporting there, good sir.
Yeah, it's a little bit random from the draft in 2017. I went to go check out a White Sox game by myself. So even though Dave M is usually the one who reps the baseball hats, I have it out here out at the cottage. I've already actually been in the lake today, boys. As you mentioned, Drew, it's supposed to go up to something ridiculous like 37 or 40 or whatever. So I took a little dip. So I'm feeling nice and refreshed, ready to go talk hockey. Let's go.
I think people really wanted you to do the show from the lake. I think that would really be stepping it up to the next level. You just floating on some sort of, you know, giant unicorn or something in the river while trying not to drop your computer and staying connected with the microphone. But I guess we'll have to wait for that for next week's show or something like that. Dave Manuk, you staying warm? Pardon me, staying cool in your humble abode?
It's quite the temperature these days, but you know, in Winnipeg, you can't complain about how hot it gets because we know the alternative. So you deal with the cold, you deal with the heat. That's part of the appeal of getting all four seasons here in Manitoba.
It's too hot though, Dave. Like, it would be nice if it was like in the high 20s, but once you get into the mid 30s, it's too much. Like, I have sunburn on my legs, boys.
You're also wearing a fur coat on your face, so maybe that might be something you want to look into as a method of cooling yourself off. But I suppose that's a topic for another day and time. As you wave hello to somebody.
My brother-in-law just walked in the cottage.
Well, there you go.
I had to say hi.
Of course you have to say hi. You don't want to be rude. In any event, let's get started talking about the Winnipeg Jets on this Saturday morning. I want to start with the expansion draft today because I heard a lot of talk this week. It was a very quiet week for the Winnipeg Jets, as Dave M would be able to attest to. Not a lot in the morning papers this week, simply because this is very, you know, this is sort of the week where
calm before the storm, Drew.
There you go. That's exactly it, Ezzy. This is the week where it's going to be quiet, especially if the Stanley Cup final ends on Monday, as, you know, certainly going to end, you would expect, Monday or Wednesday, given the way it's 3-0 Tampa Bay right now. And then things are going to start picking up because then the
expansion be over Monday. Draft.
Then the expansion draft is front and center. And then it's the NHL draft and free agency. So the next 3 weeks are going to be really, you know, hot and busy up until August. And then that's when things are really going to slow down at that point in time. But I want to start with the expansion draft, as I mentioned, because I'm hearing a lot of talk. A lot of the debate, again, continues to be about DeMelo versus Stanley. DeMelo versus Stanley, which one do you protect? And Ted Wyman, our friend from the Winnipeg Sun, is going to be on a little bit later in the show in about 25 minutes time or so. And the Winnipeg Sun did their You Be the Boss series, where they sort of polled Jets fans to see what they think about the team and about, you know, hot button issues. And of the fans polled by the Winnipeg Sun, or the fans that responded to the Winnipeg Sun poll, 70% thought that the Jets need to protect Morrissey, Pionk, and Logan Stanley. Only 13% thought the Jets should protect Morrissey, Pionk, and DeMelo. And as much as I think Logan Stanley is a good story, and his development is very interesting, and he certainly, the size that he brings to the Winnipeg Jets defense is important, I think that a lot of people are underestimating the skill set and what Dylan DeMelo brings to the Winnipeg Jets beyond goals and assists. Because if you're looking strictly at goals and assists, that's not how you're going to, you know, Dylan DeMelo is not going to jump off the page at you. But I'm shocked that the disparity between Stanley and DeMelo for protection is as sizable and the gulf is as wide as it is, at least according to that Winnipeg Sun You Be the Boss survey.
Yeah, and I think, guys, a lot of it has to do with just how well Stanley played in a year in which you didn't think that he would play the majority of the season with the Jets, right? And including, you know, it doesn't hurt that he scored those two goals, in the game against Montreal in game four, right? So, I mean, that's what everyone's kind of last impression of Stanley is. So it doesn't surprise me that a lot of people want Stanley to remain a Jet, but it does surprise me, Drew, that it's, you know, 70% or 69% or whatever it is. But guys, like, the Jets have a tough decision here, because if you don't have Dylan DeMello on your right side, like, you're really thin on the right side. You're already a little bit thin with DeMello on the right side, like, once you go down the depth chart, right? And we know that, you know, the Jets organizational strength right now is deep prospects on the left side with Heinola and Samberg, right? Like, mm-hmm. Dave has been talking about that for all season long, really. So I agree with you, Drew. Like, if I'm, you know, picking my, you know, protection list for the Jets, it's absolutely Morrissey, Pionk, and Dylan DeMello. And, you know, we do have to factor in that the Jets can swing a deal to keep Stanley. So, I mean, that's always, you know, that could always be the thinking for Chevy, is that, yeah, we're going to protect DeMello. And I think the main reason why the Jets are probably leaning towards DeMello is because of the commitment they made to him signing the four-year deal, right? And I don't think they want to lose a guy like that, a top four right shot defenseman, top pairing defenseman. They don't want to lose him for nothing. And obviously you don't want to lose. There's a lot committed to Logan Stanley in terms of, you know, just being drafted by the Jets back in 2016 and, you know, playing all the years with the Moose. So there's a lot of, there's an investment in Stanley as well, but I think you just have to pick, you know, what makes more sense. And again, it's kind of, you know, tough to analyze it in the sense that, you know, if the Jets protect DeMello, you're thinking, well, the Jets aren't going to be able to keep Stanley. That's not the case. I think the Jets probably will, you know, do everything they can, Dave, you know, to make sure that they keep Stanley, even if they don't protect him. And then, you know, they'll take the risk of losing a Jansen Harkins or a Mason Appleton. I would think that Seattle would probably take Appleton over Harkins, but you never know what they want. So, yeah, I'm still going with DeMello, but, you know, the only man that knows, you know, who he's protecting is Chevy. So we'll have to wait, you know, 2.5 weeks to find out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any question as, and it's funny how much the world has turned on its head from where we were, you know, last summer when people wouldn't even have thought about Logan Stanley. And now the entire fan base is fiercely protective of Logan Stanley and what his potential is. And I think part of the problem, I think, with what Paul Maurice did in terms of almost protecting Logan Stanley was you didn't really get a chance to see what he was like against upper echelon talent. And I think that's kind of that uncertainty that probably some folks have with Logan Stanley is, okay, well, he was good in the third role pairing, but what happens when you move him up the lineup? What happens when you move him, you know, to the second pairing? What happens when you move him to a first pairing, you know, if you have injury? And I think that is probably the big question mark. So I don't think it's as cut as dry as people are making it out. And trust me, I've, you know, followed Logan Stanley as close as anybody in the city, and his story is remarkable. But I don't think it's as easy as, you know, people are trying to make it out to be, because to the point that was just made, the Jets are extremely thin on right side. I mean, you've got, as to the point, you've got Heinola and Samberg. You know, and Samberg's a big boy. He's obviously not as big as Logan Stanley, but he's not a small guy either. And he'll be a guy after a first-year pro. We'll see what he's able to do in terms of making that jump. I'm not saying he's going up and replacing, you know, person X, but I'm just saying that he's potentially going to be able to do that this season. With the right side of the defense, folks have to realize, like, the Jets, and I'm not suggesting to your other point you've just made, and I think it's an accurate one. Number one, they can make a trade to protect one of the guys that they don't want to lose. So that's a very real possibility. And number two, the other thing is we have to factor in who the Jets are going to bring in, right? And what kind of players. You know, is it going to be a Jamie Oleksiak? Is it going to be a David Savard? So it's very hard in this current view to say this is exactly what the Jets are going to do, because we don't know the way the organization is going to look. But right now, if you look at things right now, you know, from a prospect bring guys up situation, you really don't have on that right side, other than, you know, like I said, a guy I'm a big proponent of, 2017 third round pick Johnny Kovacevic, who just had a great second year as a pro. And he's 6'5". He's a big boy. He can handle himself, can skate. So there's a player who on your right side
is someone. But he's at least a year, he's at least a year, maybe 2 years away from you know, an NHL career. I think you would agree with me. Like, there's no expectation that Johnny Kovacevic is going to step into the Jets' right side defense next season.
No, I don't think so either. I wouldn't say he's 2 years away. I think he's made pretty big strides this year. I mean, he played 38 minutes one game, so sure. He's been given a tremendous amount of responsibility. But again, remember, this is a player who, in his first year, which is only 2 years ago, was in a rotation with the other Jets prospects, and then due to injury, he was able to get into the lineup more. Other Jets prospects playing for the Moose, I should say. But and then he obviously got into the lineup more regularly. Again, only his second year as a pro, so. You know, could he see some action with the Jets? Absolutely next year. Would he be a regular? I mean, I'd be surprised, but, you know, again, guys, if they're able to do the work in the offseason, and Johnny Kovacevic has shown that he's prepared to do that, maybe he's able to make that jump. I don't like to bet against people. I'm just saying I tend to take more of a risk averse, let these guys marinate in the American Hockey League before you throw them into the fire of the National Hockey League.
That's a lottery ticket win if that ends up happening for the Winnipeg. They can't be counting on that. And no. To your point, I mean, you look at your right side. Let's, for argument's sake, say the Jets, you know, protect Stanley over DeMello and they lose DeMello. Well, your right side defense has Neil Pionk. There's really nobody else under contract there. Remember, Tucker Poolman is a UFA. He's a pending UFA. I mean, to your point, you lose DeMello. Now you're trying to fill with at least a couple of roles on your right side this offseason, you know, either via, you know, free agency or either via trade. So, I mean, there's a domino effect. No matter what you do here, there's a domino effect. So that leads me to this next question for you guys. You know, we remember that the Jets swung that trade with Vegas so that they wouldn't take Toby Enstrom. And I believe the cost was they swapped positions in the first round and it was a third round pick. If I recall correctly, that was the cost of doing business.
That sounds right. Yeah.
If that's the cost this year for the Jets to not lose one of DeMello or Stanley, or even one of Harkins or Appleton, is that a cost worth paying from your yes. perspective? A first yes. round swap and then a mid round draft pick.
Yeah. And that's why, you know, going back to what Dave says, it's really hard to predict next year's defense, right? Because you just mentioned Tucker Poolman. Like, I think there's a chance he comes back. He'll probably get like maybe a 2 year deal, maybe a 3 year deal, right? Like, I don't think he's going to get, you know, long term like Neil Pionk, but regardless, Tucker Poolman most likely is a third pairing guy, right? So let's go under the, you know, scenario one, the Jets protect DeMello. Your right side could be the same next year as it is this year, right? With DeMello, Pionk, and Poolman. But on the left side, we don't know if Derek Forbert's coming back. So let's assume that Forbert's not coming back. So you have to find another left shot defenseman, unless you think the Jets are prepared to go in next year with Josh Morrissey, Ville Heinola, and Logan Stanley on your left side. But if you read
I'm sorry, and I wanted to throw out Nathan Beaulieu. I mean, you know, as depth is still under contract for next sure. year.
Yeah, strictly and Nathan Beaulieu is, yeah. And so, you know, Beaulieu at best is going to be a third pairing defenseman. All due respect to Beaulieu, you're not expecting him to be a top four defenseman. So like Shouldn't Dave said, like, right. So, I mean, if you don't protect DeMello, then you're going to have to now get two top four defensemen in theory, unless, you know, you expect Ville Heinola to play a top four role, which I think he can, but you just can't necessarily at this point predict that. That goes back to what I was saying before, guys. It's really tough to predict what the Jets will do here. I think the best money is on the, and I know there was a couple comments like Rob wasn't liking the fact that it's not that I'm, you know, saying DeMello is a better defenseman than Stanley. I'm just saying that, you know, I've been wrong before, Rob. It's just at this point, I think it's easier to replace, I guess, what you need on the left side. But I do think that there is a chance that the Jets do make that deal to protect Stanley. The Jets really like Stanley. The organization loves him. So it's not like the Jets are giving up on him if they don't protect him. They just don't want to lose DeMello as well. So I guess you could say the other thing, would you protect Stanley and then make a deal so that Seattle doesn't take DeMello? I guess, you know, you could do that as well. But obviously you don't want to lose either of these defensemen, but regardless of who they protect, the Jets are going to have to bring in a top four defenseman. You just can't go into next season with the same defense as this past season.
Certainly, I would agree with that. And then the Jets spoke about that during all the exit interviews, that there was a need to upgrade the defense. Ezzie, we'll deal with the fact you're drinking out of a red Solo cup at 9:15 in the morning.
It's water. Don't worry.
Okay, I just want to be clear. It could be. It doesn't. You're on vacation. You're at the lake. No judgment. But just saying. You know,
I'll pop in a few margaritas later. But right now, it's water. You can't really see it, but. I mean, it's so hot, boys. You have to be drinking like, you know, 10 cups of water when it's this hot.
at least hydrate. We do recommend that everybody stays hydrated. I mean, you don't want to get overheated. Certainly, we'll do the overheating with some of our opinions this morning. Dave Manuk, want to make mention that this opening segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Dave, how much do you think in the Stanley versus DeMello debate, we saw how improved the play of Josh Morrissey was when he was reunited with Dylan DeMello? How much do you think that factors in to the Jets' decision-making? Because we know that Morrissey struggled this year when he was paired with less talented defensemen. Tucker Poolman was his primary partner for a lot of the year, to the consternation of many Jets fans who didn't understand that decision because they thought that, you know, Poolman was overmatched, and it, you know, and a lot of people said it also impacted Morrissey's play. When you saw Morrissey and DeMello together, doesn't that sort of add extra fuel for protecting DeMello simply because how much it improved Josh Morrissey also as a result?
Yes, I mean, that's true, Drew. But again, it comes back to what I was saying earlier, which is the uncertainty with which the lineup will look based on potential free agents, right? And David Savard is a perfect example of a guy who could come in and play a top four role on the Jets. He's big. He's physical. I mean, it makes a lot of sense because he and Pierre-Luc Dubois are like best friends. And I know people are like, oh, what does that matter? Well, you know, when you add a little more comfort to a guy in an organization, it's easier for David Savard to come in here to Winnipeg when Pierre-Luc Dubois is here, and it's easier for Pierre-Luc Dubois to add someone like that. So that's a kind of player who's obviously going to most likely have a Stanley Cup at the end of this season for Tampa. He's the kind of player who potentially could come in and you say, okay, well, could you replace, you know, Dylan DeMello with David Savard? For sure you could. It's not ideal, though. It still doesn't change the fact that the problem with the Jets, and we talked about it throughout the course of the last few shows, is this idea that all of these D prospects, and I'm not big on rushing guys to the NHL because I think there's just too much pressure on them to have that level of success that's necessary. I think if you can, augment that by inserting some veteran guys, which you're going to need anyways, right? A. Paul Maurice wants veteran defensemen in his lineup generally. So that's probably going to help anyways. But again, like I said, it comes down to the idea that who do you have? Like Tucker Poolman is ideally suited to be a third pairing defenseman. Mm-hmm. Or if he has to be you can put him as a seven if you bring a guy in. But the point is that to me, that you don't want to put guys in over their heads. And again, you show me an NHL roster that has a guy making basically the league minimum. And I know salary doesn't necessarily indicate where you should be playing. Some guys make $8 million to play on the first line. The point I'm making is you show me an NHL team that has a guy who's really making the league minimum, who's not on his ELC, playing in a top pairing role. And I don't know how many teams you're going to find that for. Tucker Poolman was put in position that wasn't best suited for his talents, and it didn't really help. And so Josh Morrissey was not himself. He was better with Dylan DeMello. I don't think anybody's going to question that. So I think that if you can do these things to make a player like Josh Morrissey, who you've invested a lot of money and time in, to be a better player, that's better for your hockey organization. And we saw what happens when Josh Morrissey plays well. So I really think it's a real interesting predicament in the sense that you don't know who you're going to bring in terms of free agency to augment your roster before the expansion draft takes place. So I think there's a lot of question marks for Kevin Shevelev. I'm with Ezzy. I'm inclined to believe he's going to try and make a trade to save his defense because, again, then he doesn't have to rush Samberg because I'm okay with Samberg playing with the Moose to start next season and having Ville Heinola, Logan Stanley, and Josh Morrissey on your left side. I have no problem with that. I think those guys, I think Heinola's ready for it. I think Stanley's ready for it. But I still think you need to bring in more guys anyway. So if you bring in Alexiak, and you have Heinola and Stanley rotating in and out. I mean, guys, everybody knows it's not like defensemen are indestructible. So you're gonna need guys to be able to get in there.
And I think, you know, another guy I would throw in there, and you know, he's somebody that we haven't talked about since the trade deadline, is like a Matthias Ekholm, like that level of a defenseman on the left side. Because I think, you know, Jamie Oleksiak is a very capable defenseman, but Matthias Ekholm is on a different level than Oleksiak. So that just kind of further complicates it, right, guys? Like, if the intention for, you know, Chevy and company is to bring in a left shot defenseman in your top four, then that's even more reason why, you know, you don't expose Stanley. Pardon me, you do expose Stanley. So I think that there's a lot of defensemen out there, right? Like, I don't think there's any chance Duncan Keith is going to come in. Like, I realize he grew up in Winnipeg, guys, but like, the Jets don't need, you know, a Duncan Keith towards the end of his career. Like, all due respect to Duncan Keith, like, on a good team, he's probably a third pairing defenseman, right? Like, he's won his Stanley Cups. He's had a great career. But Duncan Keith is not who the Jets need. I agree with Dave. Like, I'm on the David Savard train. Look, you see this, the Savard hit on Corey Perry last night in game three. Like, Savard could easily be first pair, second pair, right shot defenseman. I actually think Savard and Morrissey would be a really good pair. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, we talked about it, like Manson, Ekholm. So it's really tough to predict what's going to happen on the Jets back end, depending on who they're really going to go after. Right. Because, like, we know they were after Oleksiak. We know that they were interested in Ekholm. We know they were interested in Savard. Dave mentioned the connection between Pierre-Luc Dubois and Savard. Right. So there's a lot of guys out there. But at the end of the day, this is just my own personal opinion. I think they're going to be able to hang on to DeMelo and Stanley.
I tend to agree with you. I don't think that I think the Jets will likely find a way to not lose somebody off of their roster, just like they did with the Vegas one. I just think that, the price they paid a few years ago wasn't overwhelming. I know everybody points out and says, oh, that the Jets could have had Nick Suzuki, you know, I mean, yeah, and ifs and buts, you know, were candy and nuts. I mean, I think it's a couple steps away from necessarily saying that, you know, that Nick Suzuki obviously would have been the exact same player that he is with the Jets. And I'm also not giving up on Christian Vesalainen as a guy who can still have some talent. So I think that, you know, right now that might not look great, just given what Suzuki has been able to do in these playoffs.
And also, but, Drew, just to jump in here, if the Jets lost Enstrom, would they have gone on that run in 2018? Right? Like, Enstrom was a pretty big piece of that. I realized that he didn't play, you know, towards the end in the Golden Knights series. But if Toby Enstrom isn't in your, you know, top four, top six, whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. Yeah, sure, you might have been able to get Nick Suzuki, but I just say that's a counterpoint to the argument, right? I don't think that was too high a price to pay to keep Enstrom.
I would agree with you. And if it's a similar cost this year to really not lose a roster player, I would be okay with it. I just go back to here's my sort of, you know, my point. And I like Logan Stanley, and I think that, you know, he still can develop as a player. I don't think that he's necessarily destined to only be a bottom pairing or a third pairing defenseman. Maybe he's got another level.
He's only 22 years old. So,
yeah. So, I mean, I think he could very well still have another level to grow. But right now, in the immediacy, right now, in the here and now, Dylan DeMelo makes other players better. Logan Stanley, you can't say that about him right now. He still needs to be sheltered. Now, I don't know, like, to my point or to what I was saying, is that always going to be the case? Could he develop into being a top four left side defenseman? Sure. I'm not saying that he's at a ceiling yet, but right now in the immediacy where the Jets need to be, because they are certainly still in a win now mode when you look at the roster and the trajectory and the sort of the curve of it all, you know, despite whatever people are saying about the coaching and the management and everything else, they want to win now. And I think Dylan DeMelo helps you win now more than Logan Stanley does.
Yeah, that's the argument, right? But again, it's assuming that the Jets don't find a way to keep both of them, right? So that's why it's kind of, you know, it's tough to really, you know, get too worried about who the Jets ultimately protect, because I do think that they're going to do everything they can, everything in their power, you know, to keep these two guys. And you know, I realize that, you know, there's a lot of reasons why you should be bullish on Logan Stanley going forward, but at the end of the day, the Jets are in win now mode. And I think, like, Stanley factors into that as well. Like, he's 23 actually, guys. He turned 23, in late May, but, you know, I do think what's more interesting to me, guys, is really, like, who is that Jets defenseman that they're really targeting right now? Because it almost seems like we're going back to, you know, prior to the trade deadline. And the same names are out there. And, you know, Dougie Hamilton is a guy that obviously, you know, is very intriguing for a variety of reasons. But I think that, you know, at this point, it's going to be tough for the Jets to be the ultimate destination for him.
Let's continue the Jets conversation with our good friend from Post Media, from the Winnipeg Sun. You know him, Ted Wyman joins us on the show. Teddy, good morning. Nice to see you, buddy. How are things?
Good morning, fellas. Great to see you as well on this. I think it's going to be very hot today.
It is. I hope you're going to be able to stay cool, whether it be through a sprinkler or a pool or maybe tipping back a few cold ones when the clock good strikes to the appropriate
air conditioning,
time.
Buddy.
What's that? Air conditioning? Yeah, air conditioning is important right now. No question about that. You know, Teddy, we were talking about the Jets and we were talking about the expansion draft. And the jumping off point for that conversation was the You Be the Boss series that you and the Winnipeg Sun run. And I was saying that I was surprised at the results that almost 70% of the respondents wanted to protect Logan Stanley along with Morrissey and Pionk, and only 13.5% wanted to protect Dylan DeMello along with Morrissey and Pionk. Were you surprised at how sizable that gap was between the Stanley lovers and the DeMello lovers?
No, not surprised, because you know how Winnipeg is. You get, like, Logan Stanley showed well this year, and you know, he does have Scott Billick would call him a unicorn, right? Because he's got that mix of size. He can pass the puck. He can obviously shoot the puck. We've seen that. And, you know, if you can move the puck and be physical, and the Jets don't have a lot of that, I think that kind of player really appeals to the Winnipeg fan base. Especially, you know, I mean, I'm not even coming close to suggesting that he's, you know, a new Dustin Byfuglien, but with Byfuglien out of the lineup, that seemed like the thing that was missing the most with the Jets. And I think a lot of people really want to see how Logan Stanley can develop as a player. And I mean, obviously he was a first round pick. They've developed him to this point. I don't think people want to see him go and help another team right now. You know, the other part of that, of course, is that people seem okay with the idea of just letting Dylan DeMello go. Well, that guy was a pretty darn good player for the Jets. I thought he was maybe one of their more consistent defensemen in the playoffs until he got injured. So, you know, it's always interesting when you see how people react to things. But I look back even to, you know, the first season the Jets were here, Jets fans decided that Johnny Oduya was terrible and Ron Hainsey was terrible, and they basically wanted them out of town, and those guys went on to have really great careers elsewhere. It's kind of the same when they decide that they love a player, and Logan Stanley, I think, is sort of that hot player du jour right now.
And Ted, right before you hopped on, we were talking about, you know, there's a strong possibility that even if the Jets expose Logan Stanley, that they could, you know, put together a trade with Seattle in order for Seattle not to take him. What would you see the price for that being? Because obviously we know that, you know, Enstrom was basically a first round swap with a third rounder thrown in. So do you think it would be similar, or is it possible that you're going to have to give up more, just considering that Stanley's a much younger defenseman than Enstrom was back in 2017?
It's an interesting question, Ezzy, because I think that there's more things in play potentially to make something like that happen than there would have been then. You know, I don't think anybody's suggesting that that the Jets are, that anybody's really untouchable right now on this Jets team. You know, I mean, I think that they could look at a lot of different kind of things that would make a move like that. Obviously, their draft pick isn't particularly high. They've got a lot of pretty decent prospects. They have two really good prospects in Perfetti and Ville Heinola. There are some other guys that could, you know, come through as well. I mean, nobody expected Logan Stanley to come through this year, and then he did, right? So you never know what you've got in your prospect stable until you really see what they can do. But there are things that they can move. There's players that are kind of on the cusp that are potential movement items, like Christian Vesalainen, for instance. There's draft picks, you know, and there's established players. So if they really feel like they want to make that move to make sure they can protect who they want in this draft, when obviously they have slightly more players than they possibly can protect right now, and they're going to lose somebody good, I think Kevin Cheveldayoff would have a lot of options. But I don't think the Seattle Kraken, is it Kraken or Kraken? I don't
know. Kraken.
Are going to, you know, I don't think that would be the only potential trading partner for Kevin Cheveldayoff right now.
You know, Ted, Drew just mentioned your You Be the Boss poll. So were there anything else that jumped out at you from the annual poll that the Winnipeg Sun did that, you know, you want to share with the people who are listening and watching?
Sure. Well, you know, I mean, I always take a look at the results, and then I look for the thing that jumps out to me. And what I really noticed was there was a lot more people voting for Paul Maurice to be fired than there were last year. And there were more people voting for Kevin Civaldayoff to be fired than there were last year. You know, I'll admit that some people criticized the format of Are You Be the Boss because we only gave them two options and they were give them a raise or fire them. But I honestly thought that that was a pretty good way to, you know, you have to make a choice, right? You have to make a
choice. What are the other options?
Well, you know, there's been times in the past where somebody might have said, you know, let's give it a year, right, and see. But I don't think that that's appropriate right now. You can't say that every year. So you have to say, what's it going to be? And, you know, I think people voted quite interestingly. I think it was about 43% that said Paul Maurice should be fired. Now, that means that 67% said that he shouldn't be fired. So there's still support for Maurice among the fan base, but it was a lot more this year than it was last year. And I don't think, you know, as much as I respect Paul Maurice, I like the guy personally. He's been terrific for us in the media. There's no doubt. I think he's a very good, experienced coach. I think he fits well for Winnipeg. And I see why the organization likes him so much. But you can't continue forever. And I think that, you know, at some point, perhaps a short leash is going to have to come out. And I think it's probably going to have to be next season. I have said this before, though, guys, and you can't really predict for sure unless you're Mark Chipman in this situation. But I will say this. The Montreal Canadiens are in the Stanley Cup final. They fired their coach this year. And I don't think anybody ever said Claude Julien was a bad coach. He's an excellent coach. He's well-respected, and he'll likely work again soon. But the change to Dominic Ducharme, especially when it came to the playoffs, has been a charm.
Ted Wyman, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live Saturday morning on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. You know, Ted, to your point there about the coaching staff, were you, you know, when the Jets went out so meekly to the Montreal Canadiens after, you know, sweeping the Edmonton Oilers, were you surprised at the tone that the team took, the organization took, and a lot of the players took, that they were so that they were sort of hanging their hats so heavily on getting past that first round and how big of an accomplishment in their eyes that was? It seemed to me that there was a lot of, you know, I see you sort of rolling your eyes there. Like, they seem to think that that was some wonderful accomplishment in their exit interviews. When I think a lot of the fan base were saying, yeah, but look at how you lost. That's more of a reality than how you won in that first round.
Just to go back to the You Be the Boss poll, I did ask that specific question. Do you consider the Jets season to be a success because they eliminated the Edmonton Oilers in the first round of the playoffs, swept them? And it was a 50-50. It was like 50.2 to 49.8. Like, it was really, really close. And so, you know, my sense, and it's a smaller sample size. I think we had about 4,000 votes, so it's not a huge sample size. But, you know, you're talking 50% of fans saw that as a great thing and worthy of celebration and not completely undermined by the fact that they got swept in the next round. And 50% said, well, this team is good enough to go farther. And they shouldn't have been swept in the second round by the Montreal Canadiens. But I don't know how you can really like we all watched that series. The Jets were never in it. Montreal owned the series from start to finish. And that is certainly an indictment of the Jets. But I don't disagree with Blake Wheeler and others who say that Montreal just played great. And you saw what they did to Vegas as well. And you saw what they did to Toronto. You know, they're not likely beating Tampa now. Obviously, it's you know, 12-3 in the series. They haven't been close, but they were playing an absolutely perfect style of hockey to beat not only the Winnipeg Jets but other teams as well. So it's just hard for me to say, well, you got to throw out the success of this season because of what happened in that series, because obviously there's two teams on the ice. And if one really gets the job done with a style that was so excellent, so perfectly played, it's just hard to suggest that that ruins the whole season for the Jets. I do think that they made some accomplishments this year. They're not exactly going in the, you know, completely right direction since 2018, obviously, but it's a bit of a bounce back this year to have won a series. That hadn't happened for a while.
Absolutely. And You know, Ted, I wanted to switch, you know, the kind of the focus to the forward group, because obviously, you know, we're talking a lot about defense and you've got a lot of good prospects in the system. Like, everybody's expecting Ville Heinola to take the next step. And, you know, everyone's curious to know, you know, how is Chevy going to address the defense? Is it going to be via trade? Is it going to be via free agency? But, you know, I realize we have some comments, today and they're kind of talking about, you know, the need for a veteran forward in the bottom six, and not just a veteran forward, like a good solid veteran forward. And if you ask Drew, Dave, they'll tell you, like, I always, you know, go back to the Cizikas, Clutterbuck, Martin line and how effective they've been for the Islanders. Obviously they can't get over the Tampa Bay hump, but Cizikas is a free agent. And I look at him and I say, like, this is a guy who had 20 goals a couple years ago. Like, if you have to pay him $4 million or $5 million to be your quote unquote fourth line center, maybe your third line center, like, that's the type of player that I think the Jets are definitely lacking. And I realize that, you know, the Jets are going to possibly lose a Paul Stastny or a Matty Perreault. But I guess the question I wanted to ask you is, how important do you think it is to bring in that type of player, or like a Barclay Goodrow, or, you know, a Blake Coleman? Like, to me, that's something the Jets are also lacking, especially when you look at that series against Montreal and the fact that, you know, they just couldn't produce any offense in the bottom six of their forwards.
Well, when you watch Blake Coleman, I don't know if that guy's anybody's third or fourth liner, I'll tell you that. I mean, he's obviously a very good player, and that's really a part of why Tampa Bay is so good, and Montreal for that matter. It's that balance, right? That's what's got them to where they are, and you have to wonder how many teams are going to start looking at that formula because it's worked so well. Hey, man, the Jets probably could have signed Corey Perry last year in the offseason. I mean, he wanted to play for Toronto. I'm not absolutely certain that Montreal was his next choice, or if other teams just didn't offer him or did. But, you know, there's a guy that obviously every team should be trying for. But I don't think you can spend that kind of Cizikas money on guys that are going to be lower down in the lineup. And that being said, I thought about this the other day. How many different guys have been brought in here over the years on those low contracts, affordable contracts, to play on the fourth line for the Jets? And if you added up all of their production, how much would it even be? It's not much. The Jets don't get a lot of production out of their fourth line. And I don't know whether that's a Paul Maurice thing or simply, they get so much production out of their top lines that there's just not a lot of room left for those bottom lines. They don't obviously get big minutes here. You'd have to almost change your shift, your philosophy, wouldn't you? If you were to bring in a player like that, if you were to bring in a player that you're spending more on to play in the bottom six, you'd have to make sure that you're going to play him more. That being said, obviously they play Adam Lowry a lot. They're invested a lot in him. They've got other guys who were on a third line this year. Kopp was there a lot. Perreault was there a lot. Appleton was there a lot. Who knows who of those guys is even going to be back. But that made up a pretty darn good line. The question is, how much can you spend to make a fourth line work?
Ted Wyman is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. If you're new to us, welcome to the program. If you've been here before, be sure to smash that like button and, you know, give us some shout outs, give us some responses to what you are thinking about this morning's program.
Ted, just to get back to your answer to Drew about the Oilers series and whether fans consider that to be a win, I suspect 2,000 of the 4,000 respondents were from the 80s, the Smythe division. And just that idea of beating an Oilers team and sweeping them was so magical and such an opposite, you know, effect of what they were used to in the 80s, that I suspect those were the probably 2,050% who responded in that way. Because, you know, like I said, that was such a thing that the Jets couldn't do, obviously Jets 1.0, that would probably be them. But anyways, you know, I wanted to ask you about goaltending, because we know that Lauren Brossoit and Connor Hellebuyck formed such a good partnership and they have such a good chemistry together, and obviously represented by the same agent as Eric Comrie, who will be an unrestricted free agent this year. But how likely is it you see this team bringing back someone like Lauren Brossoit, giving him another chance to have that role, giving him maybe a little more security because of the, you know, again, they just have a little uncertainty in terms of the goaltending position, with Mikael Burden having kind of an up and down season with the Moose and Eric Comrie, like I said, being unrestricted free agent now.
I think if Lauren Brossoit wants to come back, then he probably will. I mean, it depends if the role is good for him. He didn't get to play much this year. I thought he was fine, especially early in the season. He played pretty well. But you got Connor Hellebuck. And Connor Hellebuck wants to play every game. You know, he doesn't want to take any nights off. That guy is he's a workhorse, and he's obviously a great goalie. And it's not – you know, he was nominated for the Vezina in 2018. He wins the Vezina in 2020. I think he was fourth this year. You don't get that kind of voting if you haven't done something. And he's obviously been very, very good. And it's not just the numbers. It's also watching him. You can see that he's such an important part to the confidence of the entire Jets team. I think that they could probably replace Brossoit if they need to replace Brossoit. You know, I mean, it's not going to be all that difficult. He's a good player. He's a good fit for what they have right now. I think he works really well with Hellebuck. As you said, they both work with Ray Petkow as an agent, and they have a good system for the Jets right now because they found a backup goalie who doesn't mind only playing maybe 20 games a year in a full season. But I think that there's other options out there. And if that's the way it goes, if Brossoit wants to move on, if another team wants to give him a better chance, then I'm sure the Jets aren't going to stand in his way.
Ted Wyman, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, discussing the Winnipeg Jets, of course. You know, Ted, you look at the RFA situation for the Jets this year, and there's two big ones in Kopp and Pionk. Logan Stanley also an RFA, but assuming he doesn't get taken by the in the expansion draft, it shouldn't be that difficult of a negotiation with him. It's the Kopp negotiation that I think is going to be the most fascinating because the teams went to arbitration before. That's what led Andrew Kopp to this point. He's 1 year away from free agency, unrestricted free agency. How do you see that negotiation playing out? Historically, when a player goes to arbitration, that usually means they're not long to be in the city that they went to arbitration with. Do you see Andrew Kopp as a long-term piece here in Winnipeg, or do you think this year could be the beginning of the end of his time in Winnipeg, be it through unrestricted free agency or a trade?
I have no evidence that he wants to sign long-term here. He hasn't shown anything like that to this point. I'm not saying it won't happen, but you go through arbitration and you get to this point where all you got to do is one more year and then you can walk. Mm-hmm. Played it exactly the way he wants to play it. And I would not be shocked, guys, if he was part of a trade package this summer. I think that he's had his best season. Not a bad time to trade a guy when his value is at its highest. But it would be a loss for the Jets. Don't get me wrong. I think Kopp provides a lot for Winnipeg. His versatility up front is really good in terms of playing different positions. I think he played all three forward positions this year. He scored a bunch of goals. He had 4 in 1 game. He was a really good player for the Winnipeg Jets, and he played top 6 and bottom 6 minutes. So don't get me wrong. I think he's a very good player, but I do think that his value might be at its absolute highest right now. Combining that with the fact that he only has 1 year left, potentially if they could sign him to a 1 year deal, then you're going to lose him. So maybe you just try to package him up. And there's a possibility even right there for Seattle, right? If you're trying to get them to leave DeMello and Stanley alone, well, there's a player that maybe you could throw their way.
Ted, I wanted to go like a little off the board here. Obviously not completely off the board. There is some, implications for the Jets here. But I thought the two signings this week were very interesting, really reasonable. Right, like Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Joel Eriksson-Ek, those are the ones I'm obviously talking about. Both 8-year deals, but like it just seemed to make a lot of sense. And I'm not like a cap expert or anything like that. Richie, who used to be on the show, was much more accurate and intelligent about that type of stuff. But like it just seemed right that those two guys seem like $5 million a year players, or just over $5 million a year players. And I wanted to ask you, like, in terms of what we're about to see in 3 weeks' time in free agency, do you think that's a sign of things to come? Because we have the flat salary cap. We know that, this isn't the greatest free agent crop, right? Like you've got Taylor Hall out there. You've got Paul Stastny out there, like Dougie Hamilton. I guess you could throw in Ovechkin, but I think we all expect, him to get $10 million or whatever he wants from Washington. So do you think that the Nugent Hopkins and the Joel Eriksson-Ek signings are a sign of things to come, in that we're going to see contracts that actually make sense?
Well, do they make sense? At least on the Nugent Hopkins front, I'm not so sure about that. 8 years, man. Holy cow. Like that guy. And you know, he makes pretty good money too. Like I my buddy Derek Van Deest, who I often do videos with during hockey season in Edmonton, does not think that that was a good move by the Oilers. He thinks they should have maybe just let Nugent Hopkins go, for that matter, just because he doesn't have huge production. You know, like, I guess he's a decent second, you know, line center. Well, depends whether Dreisaitl and McDavid are playing together or not, but he's a decent second line player for them. There's no doubt about that, but it's still a lot to give to a guy who mostly has had declining numbers. And that's obviously a concern. I just wonder what Jet fans would think if they signed a player like that to that kind of deal, because you're going to be locked into that for an awfully long time. So that's really where I think about that one. Eriksson Ek, can't say I'm as familiar with him lately because I didn't see a whole lot of him play this year. He's obviously a good player and will be back in the Jets division next year. But he's, you know, I think this is maybe more of a sign of what you're doing with players that you already have under contract that are approaching that unrestricted free agent area. I'm not sure that that's what it's going to look like when it actually opens up in free agency, Ezra, but I can't predict it, right? I mean, we'll just have to see how that works.
And I just wanted to throw in before Dave gets in here, I was surprised that Nugent Hopkins got 8 years. I was more referring to, you know, the AAV. I thought $5 million, you know, made a lot of sense for Nugent Hopkins. But I agree with you, Teddy, that, you know, I didn't expect him to get 8 years. I was thinking more kind of like, you know, 4 or 5. Just wanted to get that in there.
You know, Ted, I think just to springboard off Vezzi's question, I think when Jets fans, when you say you're not as familiar with Eriksson Ek this year, I think everybody remembers game one of the 2018 playoffs when Dustin Byfuglien just demolished Eriksson Ek in that series against the Minnesota Wild. I don't think anyone can forget that hit by number 33. Yeah, exactly. No, but you know what? And this is, I mean, it's a bit of an obvious question, but I guess tying it into that You Be the Boss poll you guys did, how important is this summer for Kevin Cheveldayoff? Forgetting about, we know how hot the seat is going to be on Paul Maurice, but how important is Kevin Cheveldayoff's? You can't just continue to do the same thing you're doing and expecting a different result. At this point, he has to make a move that's going to improve his defensive core to be, you know, when you have a, like you talked about it, Ted, when you have a goaltender who's in his prime and is doing what Connor Hellebuyck is doing, most teams don't have that luxury. So when you do, you have to take advantage of it. How important is it for Kevin Cheveldayoff to really do something this summer to say this team has the opportunity to do something? I've got to show them that we can do that by bringing in the type of help that it's going to be necessary. And there's going to be pain, but I'm going to do it.
Out of 10, 9.5. I mean, it really is important. You're absolutely right, Dave. And I think any offseason with an expansion draft is an extra difficult, important offseason for a general manager. There's got to be some, like they did some wheeling and dealing last time. And, you know, some GMs in the NHL got absolutely hosed by Las Vegas. I mean, the Golden Knights got rich off of the mistakes of other GMs in the last expansion draft. I don't think anybody wants that to happen again. When it comes to the defenseman, Dave, I said this exact same thing last time. I did not think in the offseason last year that there was any more glaring need than to bring in a top four defenseman for this team, and they didn't do it. And I think today, You Be the Boss will probably, I think it said something like 93% of the fans said defense is the most glaring weakness on this team. And I think 70% or more said that they should trade a top forward for a top defenseman. So I don't know who exactly people have in mind. I sure as heck don't think they want it to be Nikolai Ehlers. I don't think they want it to be Adam Lowry, but I'm not sure who else is untouchable right now in the eyes of the fans. And they feel like getting that top four defenseman in here is the most important thing. But, you know, last year the Jets, they were in a position where I'm certain they were trying to bring in a top four defenseman for the entire offseason, and they just couldn't make that deal happen. And here's the problem. If Alex Pietrangelo is available and Winnipeg's making an offer and Vegas is making an offer, who's going to win? And that's just the bottom line. You cannot discount that difficulty that Kevin Cheveldayoff has to face every time he's trying to do something like this. Of course, Alex Pietrangelo would have made all the difference for the Winnipeg Jets, even if they could have afforded him. I'm not sure. I don't think they could have. But, you know, I'm just saying, it's just not that simple. The one guy I thought they missed out on that they might have been able to get last year was Nate Schmidt. But, you know, I'm not sure Nate Schmidt played that great for Vancouver anyway. So, to be honest, I just think that it's hit and miss. Yeah, maybe you can go after a Dougie Hamilton, but there are people out there who think he has his detractors as well, and especially when it comes to his defensive game. So, you know, is that what they need? Do they need another guy that, like, they need a puck mover? That's obvious. They do need that, and he is good at that. But you got to be well-rounded. It's got to be one of those guys that's going to make the difference for this team. And they need some size. They need some ability. They need experience. They need it all. And I don't think that they're able to make it work just with what they've got here and the pieces that you might bring in. Derek Forbert, I thought, played really well for the Winnipeg Jets this year. But another Derek Forbert isn't going to be enough in my mind.
Ted Wyman is the sports editor for the Winnipeg Sun. He covers the Winnipeg Jets as well. You can read all about what will undoubtedly be a busy month for the Winnipeg Jets in the Sun. Ted, thanks so much for joining us. We always appreciate your time and your insight. We'll let you get back to that sweet, sweet air conditioning.
Yeah, stay cool, my friends.
Thank you, Ted. Good seeing you, buddy. There he goes, Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun. Let's take our first break. When we come back, we'll talk more about the Jets, talk about the RFA statuses of both Andrew Kopp and Neil Pionk. Much more to come. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
Keeping Winnipeg laughing for over 30 years. Rumors, Canada's longest-running comedy club, bringing you the biggest laughs from the best comedians on the planet. Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the greats, and all the up-and-comers, too. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends, or book your office or birthday party. Even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Hey, Drew.
Ezzy, whoa, what a smile!
Yeah, I got my crowns done at Linden Market Dental Center, and they whiten my teeth.
I see.
They're so bright that every time I smile, they go...
We have hockey tonight. Do you have a mouth guard to protect those pearly whites?
I sure do.
Whoa, they even ting through the mouth guard.
Linden Market Dental Center covers all your dental needs, from restorative to cosmetic dentistry, and will fit you with a sports guard for that active lifestyle. 877 Waverly, see LindenMarketDental.com.
Hi, it's Drew from Illegal Curve here. Selling your home can be stressful, but it wasn't for me. Thanks to my friends at Zappia Group Realty, they made the process so easy. My home sold within 48 hours and with multiple offers. Zappia Group Realty took care of everything with their exquisite customer service and attention to detail. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, get started by talking to Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Online at zappiagroup.com.
While you can't always count on your team winning, nor your favorite player scoring, one thing you can always count on is Bernstein's Deli. They've expanded their services because the team at Bernstein's Deli wants to accommodate your needs and keep you safe. Open Tuesday to Saturday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. to serve you. Head to your phone, in-store or online to shop for groceries or order meals from the restaurant, like the legendary Illegal Curve Sandwich. Just go to bernsteinsdeli.com.
So you're a pizza person, you married a wing person, but somehow your kids are salad people. You can't pick your fam, but you can pick your BP meal deal. Starting from $18.99 for takeout or delivery at bostonpizza.com.
Saturday morning, we're back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. Nice to see so many of you in the chat room. Some new faces, some familiar faces. As always, what we ask of you is smash that like button. If you haven't already subscribed to the channel, do that as well. We have a very busy month ahead for you here in terms of live broadcasts. As always, the Saturday shows will continue. We also have a special show scheduled for the expansion draft, live coverage of the expansion draft coming up in a few weeks' time, right back here on our YouTube channel. We'll have live coverage of the first day of the NHL draft on the Friday. The second day is part of the regular Illegal Curve Hockey Show. And then we'll do a free agency show as well on the night that free agency begins on the Wednesday night. So a very busy month of July ahead for you here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It wouldn't be possible without some of our sponsors. So we do thank them, of course, and want a special shout out right now to our friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich, located in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Starting next week, you can have your Bernstein's Deli and your Illegal Curve Sandwich back in the restaurant. Live in-person dining reopening as we are improving our COVID situation here in Winnipeg. So go for it. Go check it out, bernsteinsdeli.com. Gentlemen, Andrew Kopp, Neil Pionk, the two main RFAs for the Winnipeg Jets.
Why did you mute me, Drew?
I didn't.
Or Dave muted me.
Oh, there you go.
A lot of background noise. I muted myself as well.
There you go. I appreciate that Dave, being the professional that he is keeping the volume to a minimum while I am struggling through with my hoarse voice.
I didn't think you would ever do that to me, Dave. I expected that out of Mandel, but I didn't think you would ever mute me.
I'm just cognizant of what the folks like, and I know that when I remember when I was in the press box, there's always that background noise. Everyone's like, mute your mic, Dave. So I'm aware.
There you go. That's
the man of the people.
Dave, a man of the people. Exactly right. You know, Andrew Kopp, I want to start with him in terms of the RFAs, because I think he's got an absolutely fascinating scenario this coming offseason, and I think he has all the leverage. If you're Andrew Kopp, I mean, and we asked Ted about, you know, a long-term viability here, I don't see any reason, I haven't seen or heard anything that Andrew Kopp wouldn't be interested in signing a long-term deal here in Winnipeg. That's different than saying he's for sure going to, because I certainly don't know that, but I've never seen any indicator that he's not willing to sign a long-term deal here. He's got all the leverage, because, you know, regardless of how negotiations are going, and I assume they would have started between now and whenever, and you know, free agency and everything, by being arbitration eligible, he's got that ace in the hole. He can say to the Winnipeg Jets, I'm going to take you to arbitration, and it's going to be only be a one-year award, and I'm going to walk into free agency next offseason. So exactly. He's basically going to say to the Winnipeg Jets, you have to step up now, or it's going to go to arbitration, and then I really have you, I have you hooped a little bit. I think the Andrew Kopp negotiation is going to be fascinating. He's got certainly a very hard-driving agent in Kurt Overhart, as we all remember. And I don't think that the Winnipeg Jets, you know, I think I agree with Ted. I mean, if the Jets aren't going to step up with a big dollar figure for Andrew Kopp, it's probably going to result in a trade. What would you be comfortable in seeing Andrew Kopp sign for, the number of years and the number of dollars?
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I imagine Dave agrees as well, right? Like, there is no chance that this can go to arbitration. Obviously, It can. But like you said, Drew, then you're possibly losing Andrew Kopp for nothing to free agency. So the Jets obviously don't want that to happen. So yeah, you're talking about a long-term deal, or you're talking about a trade. Like, I think you could easily, you know, make the argument that Andrew Kopp should get a 5 or 6 year deal, just in terms of like what he has meant for this organization. Ted Wyman mentioned it. Like, he's a guy that has played every single forward position, and guys, he's played on basically every single line with maybe the exception of the fourth line, right? Like, Andrew Kopp never goes down. When a player is injured, he goes up the lineup to play on the second line or the first line. So I think that, you know, I would be comfortable giving him like a 5 or 6 year deal. And, you know, in terms of, I think it's a little trickier, you know, in terms of what he would get, because, you know, he's coming off of the big offensive explosion year, right? Like, this is his best year so far. You know, didn't have his best playoffs, you know, didn't score any goals in, what was it, 8 games or 9 games. But I think, you know, you're probably looking at, Dave, like, $4 to $4.5 million a year. Like I haven't crunched the numbers, but probably that's probably what you're looking at, around 4 million.
Well, I mean, let me stop you right there, and Dave, I'll get you in here. So first of all, Andrew Copp is 27 years old. So this is going to be his biggest NHL payday. This is a guy who's, you know, incrementally increased his value contract after contract after contract. But this isn't, you know, this is the guy who's going to strike it big. This is his big contract, you know, akin to, you know, when Brandon Tanev signed with the Penguins. That was his chance to really make that big money. So it's either going to come, you know, this offseason from the Jets in terms of a long-term deal, or it's going to come next offseason when he's a free agent. But, you know, you look at what, you know, Evolving Hockey used to be Evolving Wild. They do contract projections. Mm-hmm. And they project that Andrew Copp, you know, that this is predicted. So it's, you know, and they're usually relatively close to being accurate. They're a pretty good predictor. They think that he's could be upwards of close to $5 million on a, you know, on a 4 or 5-year deal for the Winnipeg Jets. So would you be comfortable? I see Matt Reimer here in the chat saying, you know, go 5x5 for Andrew Copp.
It appears I was a little bit low, boys.
I'm saying, would you be comfortable going 5 years, $5 million per season for a guy like Andrew Copp?
It's easy for me to throw around True North's money, right? But let Dave get in here. But yeah, I mean, like I just said 4 to 4.5. So maybe it's 5, right? Look, Andrew Copp has been very valuable to this Jets organization. He's a really good hockey player and he's coming off of that career year. So do you have to pay him a little bit more? Maybe if you give him a few more years? Yeah, but put it this way, guys, if you're going to lose Paul Stastny and you know, you're possibly going to lose a Mason Appleton or a Jansen Harkins, don't you have to retain Andrew Copp? Like there's going to be a big hole in the Jets lineup if they lose Stastny, if they lose Copp, they lose Appleton, and you might also lose Matty Perreault, Dave. So yeah, $5 million a year, sure. Mm-hmm. That sounds right.
That seems high to me. I like Andrew Copp. I think Andrew Copp is best suited for a third line role with the Winnipeg Jets. I think you can put him up into the second line and he can give you some he can be a useful player and give an opportunity. I mean, we see it with a lot of guys, right? A lot of guys, you give them an opportunity and they can take it and go with it, right? And I mean, I can think of a lot of examples where guys have done that. And to me, I'm not saying you don't do it, but what my concern is you have to make sure that you have – the Jets are a team that, you know, spends – I know they've got some cap space right now, but again, you've got contracts that you need to do. You've got Pierre-Luc Dubois, who you're going to need to sign next year. You've got Neil Pionk, who you're going to need to sign.
And the Jets hope Dubois is expensive.
I would imagine that they're gonna if he has a good year this year, a bounce back year, they'll be okay paying him to be this number two center behind Mark Scheifele and give him a strong Pierre-Luc Dubois 1-2 punch for the next five to ten years or whatever it's gonna be. So I don't know that they'll be overly concerned. I like Andrew Copp as a player. I think he's a Swiss Army knife style player. I don't have a ton of confidence that he's like obviously had the 4-goal game. But I don't know that he's going to be he has enough offense to be in that second line to be worth $5 million a season. Maybe he is, but to me, you know, you got Adam Lowry, at 5 years at $3.25 million or something like that.
Exactly, so right.
Is Andrew Copp worth that much more than your number three center? I mean, again, it comes back to what do you have Pierre-Luc Dubois being? Pierre-Luc Dubois is a center, right? We that's the vision for Pierre-Luc Dubois. He can obviously play on the wing, and he didn't move to center until he was older anyways, but the reality is you brought him in to be a center and to give you that 1-2-3 punch and even maybe 4 if you include David Gustafson. Teams are going to have injuries. Teams are going to need to fill holes. Andrew Copp is that player who's shown that he can jump up. I just don't know that he has enough offense in his game that the Jets need on that second line to merit a $5 million salary. I could be wrong. I would probably think, you know, 5x4 is probably more reasonable. You know, you give the player that security to say, okay, I've got, you know, $20 million coming to me. But I think he's not, I don't see him as a $1.8 million player more significant than Adam Lowry. And I would just say that, you know, Copp and Lowry, they just have carved out such a good role together, generally speaking. And I think that would be more ideal position from a deeper team. If you're a deep Winnipeg Jets team, the way you say you are, the way you think you are, then Andrew Copp to me gives you that dynamic third line that, you know, every team needs to have a third line that can produce. So don't get me wrong. I'm not saying Andrew Copp and Adam Lowry are on that third line to be a shutdown line. You want to see those guys. You know, Adam Lowry obviously had a bounce back year from when he did the year prior. You want to see that line producing. And to me, ideally, Andrew Kopp, Adam Lowry, let's say Mason Appleton, if you don't lose them, that's your third line. That gives you that ability to A, shut down, B, produce, and allows a more dynamic player to be in that top, you know, top six position. Like, guys, Christian Vesalainen, I mean, if you don't want Christian Vesalainen as a third or fourth line player. It doesn't make use of his talent. So if you've got a winger who has got a good shot, he can skate, he's got some warts to his game, but not everybody's going to be perfect. Maybe Christian Vesalainen, who's got more offensive ability than Andrew Kopp, is the guy who's going to be up in that, you know, top six for the Winnipeg Jets, giving him that opportunity. Because if you're not going to, what's the point of keeping him? You may as well trade him. If you're not going to trust him to be in that role, he's not a fourth line player. David Gustafson, and I know I'm getting off the rails here a little bit with these thing, but you have to think about it from a totality, right? What does your team look like? And Andrew Kopp, to me, is in that third line for the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me because, you know, somebody in the chat or one of the commenters in the chat, you know, talked about how he's coming off a career year, and he certainly is coming off a career year, and this is his opportunity to strike. And I look back at, you know, Matty Perreault, when he signed his contract, was coming off what had then been his career year. He signed in the offseason before the long-term deal took place, and he's coming off, you know, a little more than 40 points that year. You know, he signed for $4.1 million for the four-year deal. Now, I think Andrew Kopp's going to probably cost a little bit more than Matty Perreault did at that time. And certainly the salary cap was different in that it was rising still when Matty Perreault signed that deal back in 2016. But if you're the Jets and you're Andrew Kopp, I mean, I think that it is going to cost pretty close to $5 million just because of how close he is to free agency. You're trying to buy out basically a whole chunk of his free agent years. And this is a guy in Andrew Kopp that the Jets don't have anybody, I think, that can really replicate his skill set, you know, ready to come into their lineup.
Well, I agree with you, Drew, but it's also like, and I agree with Dave, like considering what Lowry got on an AAV, then $5 million is definitely too high. And we don't know, guys, like this is all like, we try to predict these salaries and oftentimes we're surprised, right? So like, it's going to be somewhere around 4 to 5 million. I think we all agree with that, right? But you could be right, Drew.
I think it's going to be closer to five. Sure, I really do.
Like, who cares? Like, yeah. What I'm saying is like, yeah, okay, I agree with you. Maybe it'll be 5 million, but the point is, regardless if it's 4 or 5 million, I think at least maybe you guys disagree with me here, but I think if you lose Stastny and you lose Perreault and you lose Kopp, who's replacing that offense? Like, I agree with Dave. Christian Vesalainen could be a second line player, but are you expecting 50 to 60 points out of Christian Vesalainen? And that wouldn't even replace the offense from Paul Stastny, right? So I think you do have to factor that in. I mean, there's going to be opportunities for young players. Like, I've been along on board with Dave the whole time with David Gustafson. Like, you know, give David Gustafson a full-time NHL role. Give Christian Vesalainen a full-time NHL role. But even if those guys get full-time NHL roles, I do still think that you need to have, you know, a solid veteran in your lineup. So even if $5 million is too much, I'm just saying that I think the Jets do need to retain Kopp because of how valuable he's been to this team and his production, right? Like, I don't know if, you know, 3 years from now, Andrew Kopp's going to put up 50 points on the third line, but, you know, considering he kills penalties and does all of those things, if he scores 35 to 40 points, then I think, you know, it's worth it. And let's not forget that, you know, you were playing Matty Perreault $4 million to play on your fourth line, but he was pretty solid on the fourth line. So sometimes you do have to pay a little bit more. Look at like a guy like Zach Hyman, right? He played on the top line, but he played on the third line. He's probably going to get around $5 million a year. I think Hyman and Copper are, you know, pretty similar players actually.
Yeah, I think that, you know, maybe Hyman has a little bit more offensive upside than Kopp does, but I agree with you, Ezzy. There's certainly comparisons in that they're two guys who go to the dirty areas, who do sort of the hard work, and if they're playing with scorers, they can maybe do the hard work that helps those scorers get into the softer zones where they can, you know, unleash their talents a little bit more. You know, every team needs a guy like an Andrew Kopp. I just don't, you know, if the Jets subtract him from the roster, to your point, if you subtract Kopp and you subtract Stastny and if you subtract Perreault, and then if you happen to lose one of, you know, Harkins or Appleton in the expansion draft, well, you have a lot of holes then you have to fill in your lineup. So I know, you know, to Ted Wyman's point a couple minutes ago, that they're looking at maybe, you know, maybe you cop as part of a package to fill something on the back end, and they certainly need to upgrade their defense. But if you subtract from up front too much to fill the back end, you're just replacing one problem with another, and I think that's a serious concern for the Winnipeg Jets, Dave.
Well, and you don't have a ton of prospects who are coming up and taking on those roles. That's the other kind of bad thing you have to factor in, right? Among your forward group. I mean, David Gustafson is, in my estimation, NHL ready, and I think he's a guy who should be given that opportunity to be that fourth line center for the Winnipeg Jets, at least have a chance to battle it out in training camp. And I think that there's, you know, a good chance that Cole Perfetti, we'll see what happens with him. But, you know, we talked about it with Craig Button, right? When we had him on last week about this idea of, will Cole Perfetti be better off playing for the Winnipeg Jets or, you know, back in Saginaw for in the OHL? So Cole Perfetti is another guy that people have to factor in. You know, there's a pretty dynamic young man who, if he continues to work on his game, and we're talking a really smart guy, and you guys know I don't like to rush prospects into the NHL. I generally don't. But if he can't play pro hockey next season, that's a player that if he's had a really good summer, maybe he gives you that opportunity to fill a role. And, you know, Cole Perfetti, I'm not putting him in and expecting the world, but we've seen young guys come in and have success. And he learned, like I said, an exceptionally smart young man who is shown an adaptability to the pro game, went from going, you know, being a perimeter player to going to those dirty areas. It'll take some adjustment at the NHL level. It's even faster than the AHL, especially given the fact that a lot of guys who would have been playing the AHL were on the taxi squad this year. So there'll definitely be some adjustment, but here's another young player who could potentially fill a hole that we're talking about. And you're absolutely right, guys. Like this is something that we have to think about, is what does the roster end up looking like if you don't do this? But like I said, it's all about what the salary cap is going to look like. And you can't, you know, it's a jigsaw puzzle, really. And it's about matching things up and saying, okay, well, we're going to give Neil Pionk a 5-year deal, a 6-year deal, whatever that's going to look like. It's going to be this. We're going to have to project it. We're going to have to leave some money available for, you know, Cole Perfetti or for Eric Dubois, Pierre-Luc Dubois. They'll probably have to sign Eric Dubois to a new contract with the Manitoba Moose. But the point is, you just have to leave yourself a little bit of flexibility. You don't want to be too tight because, guys, what have we talked about? This team needs to bring in some veteran defensemen. So I don't know that I agree with you, Drew. There's some question marks in terms of the UFAs. Mm-hmm. But you just have to be able to solve your number one issue, which is probably your defense. So, again, we're getting all over the place. But I just think, it goes back to that idea of a puzzle and trying to fit all the pieces together. And like I said, that's what Kevin Cheveldayoff's job is this summer.
Well, and I want to throw this in quickly, Drew, here, because I know, you know, Joe Smith is going to join us shortly. But, you know, we've got a comment up from Waddy72. Like, I kind of, you know, can see the Jets going that way if they want to spend, you know, a bigger amount of money on a defenseman, right? Like a guy that I mentioned, I think that was a couple of weeks ago, like Alec Martinez. Like Martinez, guys, mm-hmm. Everybody kind of thought he'd be a third pairing guy for Vegas. He was in their top four. He was excellent. Like, if you were Chevy, like, would you give Alec Martinez $5 million a year? Like I would. I think he could be a really good top four defenseman. I wouldn't give him, you know, 5 or 6 years, but, you know, you sign him to 4x5 or something like that. Like, but again, we just don't know, you know, who the Jets are targeting right now. Like maybe Dougie Hamilton is a guy they're going to aggressive after. Maybe it is Seth Jones. And again, I don't want to set off, you know, a fire here and you know, suggest the Jets are going after Seth Jones, but there are a lot of guys out there that are available, right? Like Matthias Ekholm, Josh Manson, David Savard. Like we could throw out 10 different defensemen that could be targets for the Jets. So that is an option. I think, you know, I'm almost leaning, Drew, towards it's 50-50 if the Jets, you know, keep Kopp. I do think, you know, there's a possibility he's traded. I'm not suggesting he will be traded, but I think there is the possibility out there. If I would probably re-sign him if I was Chevy, just because of how, as I mentioned, how valuable he is to the team. But if you have to pay him upwards of $5 million, maybe the Jets say, you know, that's just too much. We're going to trade him and, you know, see what we can get for him.
Well, I would suspect that the Jets, I mean, I'm relatively confident in saying they've had some discussions with Kopp and with Kurt Overhart. And you wonder that if the determination is made between now and the expansion draft that there's just not a deal to be signed with Kopp, do the Jets try and make that trade before the expansion draft? And as a result, then they can get to protect another forward like a Mason Appleton, so that, you know, you trade away Kopp if it's for a player or for a draft pick or however, whoever it is, and how it factors into the expansion draft, time would obviously tell. But I wonder if you try and make that move earlier this offseason in order to then protect another forward. And
Seattle has the cap room, right? Like, it's not like Seattle is right up against the cap, right? Like,
I'm not even saying that you'd have to trade him. I'm not saying that you would necessarily trade him to Seattle. You could trade him to any team that maybe doesn't have seven forwards that they clearly need to protect, or you know, or that they're willing to trade a younger player that might not need protection, whatever it might be. I mean, obviously, you know, the deal would be worked on, you know, if and when it gets worked on. But I do think it's very interesting that if that was to happen, that could happen potentially before the expansion draft, thus freeing up the Jets, like you saw with the Nashville Predators. They trade away Victor Arvidsson this week to the Los Angeles Kings. The Kings are happy to protect Arvidsson because they didn't have enough forwards to protect that they really needed to badly. The Predators get an asset, or they get a second round pick and a third round pick in exchange for not losing a guy they were likely to lose in the expansion draft.
I thought that trade made a lot of sense for both teams. Like, I didn't think, you know, like Arvidsson, obviously, like, I think you have to start using that rebuild word, right, guys? It's crazy to think that with Nashville, but Nashville's not a contender anymore. They're just a team that, you know, maybe can get into the playoffs, but I think that trade might be a sign of things to come with Nashville in terms of, you know, trading some of their more veteran players.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Joe Smith of The Athletic is going to join us to talk about the Lightning. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Joined on the program now by Joe Smith, who covers the Tampa Bay Lightning for The Athletic. The Lightning, soon to be, very soon to be, a back-to-back Stanley Cup champion. All due respect to the Montreal Canadiens. They're not coming back from three games down. Joe, good morning. Nice to see you. How are things?
Doing well. How are you guys doing?
Doing fine and dandy, Joe. I mean, you got to start with this Tampa Bay Lightning. The juggernaut, because there's really no better word for them. Are you surprised at what they've been able to do to this Montreal Canadiens team, a team that had been playing such good hockey, had been, you know, had played so well versus the Leafs and then the Jets, and then to dispatch the Golden Knights in the manner that they did? Are you surprised at how, I'm going to say, easy it's been for the Lightning, even though I know easy isn't necessarily the best word?
Yeah, easy is not the best word, but I'm not surprised. I mean, watching these guys the last couple of years, there's kind of like this relentless determination with this group, and even more maturity than there was even last year. Like, they were legitimately think that this could be last time a lot of those guys will be together again, and that's a kind of a driving force here to be special, to be unique, to be one of the top teams of this generation, and to go back to back in these circumstances in 280 something days with a bubble last year, and this one would certainly put them in that category, I think. So I think Montreal, you know, is a really good team, and they had a heck of a run so far. I thought, you know, they could still win another game in the series. The series is not over yet. But I just think that the Lightning have, overall, they had the better team. And if they played their game, they would show it. And this game two was a game where I think Montreal had a great chance to win, that the Lightning, you know, with their elite talent and just depth, was just enough to win a game they probably shouldn't have won.
Joe, wanted to ask you about the article that you read, wrote this morning for The Athletic. I read it just before we came on, about Tyler Johnson. And, you know, just it was incredible watching him last night, because, you know, kind of reminds you of what was happening earlier in the playoffs with Paul Byron, right? Because both of these players were put on waivers, and both of these guys have played significant roles. And you wrote about this in the article. You said that, you know, there's a really good chance this is Tyler Johnson's, you know, last year. So just how special is it for a player who easily could have been on another team, but, you know, now he's most likely going to win his second Stanley Cup? It just seems like, you know, the perfect ending to his chapter with the Tampa Bay Lightning.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think Cooper put it best last night. He goes, I'm extremely happy about the win, but I might be happier for Tyler Johnson. And a lot of those guys in that room saw what he went through last year. He went through waivers twice, trade rumors. He couldn't even be on the ice for the banner unveiling on opening night because he was on waivers for some cap maneuvering. you know, down into a fourth line role, playing the least amount of minutes he's played in his career. And for a guy who was their number one center and all-star, kind of the rock star, that 15 cup run, you know, it's a big adjustment. And so he never complained, never whined, and just put his head down and worked. And you don't win cups like this without a culture like that, or guys buying into each role and everyone feeling connected, because at some point they're going to deliver when you need them the most. And, you know, we saw Blake Coleman, after having a bad turnover in game six against the Islanders in OT, come back and have a iconic moment in game two that helped them win that game. And you look at Tyler Johnson now, just part of that culture that they built. And that's why it was kind of symbolic of this team. And it could be a swan song for Tyler Johnson. It very well could be. Thought he'd be gone last year, and they needed to make some moves this offseason. But if it was, it'd be quite a lasting image and for a decade here with Lightning.
Joe, should every team that wants to win the Stanley Cup sign Patrick Maroon?
They can. Maybe Seattle should pick up in the expansion draft in the summertime, right? But now it's I know he's only, you know, plays 8-10 minutes a game, but you can't underscore the value of a player in the room like that and on the road. And he's one of those guys that holds the teams accountable on the ice. Last year, I don't think they go that far without him, because he came in when they were really still reeling mentally from that sweep against Columbus and still had that in their heads a bit. And he came in there, he said, F last year, guys, this is a different team. You guys have you watched how good you guys are playing on the ice? You know you can do it. And him and Shattenkirk were integral in them turning the page and then getting them back on track. A few beers were probably involved on the road in doing that. But yeah, he's one of those character glue guys you need on every team. And he is under contract still with Lightning next year, so he could have a chance to go for four if they do finish this third one. But no doubt a special, one of the most colorful characters in the league, and one of those guys that are really important that you don't see in the front page of the websites of the newspapers very much.
Joe Smith is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Joe covers the Tampa Bay Lightning for The Athletic. The Lightning have a 3-0 series lead over the Montreal Canadiens. Look to finish it out on Monday night in Montreal. Joe, this might be an impossible question, but I think you got the wide enough shoulders to handle it. If you had to pick one player for the Tampa Bay Lightning, who's the most important guy? Who's the guy that most stirs the drink for this, you know, this talent-laden squad? Is it Victor Hedman? Is it Vasilevsky? Is it Kucherov? I mean, a plethora of all-world talents. Who's the one that's most important?
It's a hard one. I mean, I think if you're going all the whole team and not just skaters, I think you go Vasilevsky. I just think overall, I mean, goaltenders are usually the most important positions, and like just like quarterbacks in football. And I put him on my Hart Trophy ballot this year. He's number four for me, and that says a lot for a goaltender too. And he allows them to play a certain way. They can play with sometimes some risk. They can take some chances, and he just like a security blanket back there. And he's what, giving up, I think 15 goals the last 11 playoff games. I think it was six in the series. Like, it's, you know, it's remarkable. And, you know, I think the Conn Smythe balloting, if they do end up winning and closing it out, whether it's on Monday or whatever, will be very interesting between him and getting Nikita Kucherov, who has had a historic run after missing the whole year with hip surgery, and then Braden Point, the leading goal scorer. So it's a tough question to ask, and if it's a tough question to answer, it means that they have a special group. So that's all I would say about that.
Joe, I wanted to, I mean, there's so many different players that we can ask you about. And obviously, I like how Drew asked that question. He asked you about the Conn Smythe without really asking you about the Conn Smythe, right? But I think, you know, whether Kucherov, Vasilevsky, or Braden Point wins it, I mean, I think they're all deserving. But I mean, I want to ask you about Stamkos. I want to ask you about all these guys. But the one guy, when I was kind of preparing for you to come on, you know, the one guy I wanted to ask you about is Andre Palat, because I feel like, you know, on a team that's as deep as Tampa, you're always going to have guys that are maybe underrated, right? Like, you could say an Alex Killorn is underrated, or Ryan McDonagh is underrated when you have the Stamkoses and the Kucherovs and the Points. But he kind of reminds me, like, I'm a Devils fan, so I'll admit that, but he kind of reminds me of like a Peter Sikora, the years that the Devils were winning the Cup, right? Like, they had all of these great defensemen and, you know, Gomez, Eliash, all these great players. But Palat, to me, just, he's so impressive, not only with how he contributes offensively, had a couple of assists last night, of course, but like, he's physical. He just seems to do everything. Such a smart player. Is that just kind of, again, like a microcosm of this entire team? They just have an entire team full of talented players that, you know, from top to bottom, that's one of the reasons why they're going to probably win their second straight cup.
You're right. I think he's, you know, you look at that line with Point and Kucherov, and those two guys are potentially Conn Smythe players, but, you know, you still need a third guy on that line. And not many guys can think the game like a Kucherov and Point. And so just to play with them, it's not easy just to jump on that line and be able to read off them and know where to go and know where they like the puck and everything like that. And going back to the 15 run, he was kind of the engine of that triplets line with Kucherov and Tyler Johnson, and it's kind of kept forward. And a 200-foot player doesn't say an awful lot, but kind of one of those identity players that gets you through and plays key moments. So another one of those gems the Lightning got in the seventh round back in 2011. You know, one of the last picks in that draft, and you can see why they're built the way they are, to have a guy like that on your top line. And he still has one more year left on his contract too. So he has one last chance to stay, but yeah, a terrific player and person and great find for the Lightning.
Joe Smith is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Joe covers the Tampa Bay Lightning for The Athletic. His appearance is brought to you by Boston Pizza. Boston Pizza has the perfect starting lineup tonight. With the BP Game Day Meal Deal, choose two of your favorite medium gourmet pizzas, along with a triple order of Boston's famous wings, plus two dipping sauces, all for $54.99. Available for takeout and delivery only at bostonpizza.com or download the MyBP app.
So, Joe, we have to ask about the fan reaction. What are folks in Tampa, you know, how are they feeling? How are, you know, the team's on the cusp of their second straight Stanley Cup. What kind of buzz is in the town right now?
That's pretty electric. I mean, you look at the watch party at the arena last night, was jumping in the Thunder Alley, which outside the arena was busy too. You know, think about last year, they couldn't see any of these games in person in the bubble. So I think they're probably hoping to see a cup-clinching game at Amalie Arena versus on the road. They'll take either way. But I think the Game 7 or against the Islanders are probably the loudest I've heard this building in a long time. And that was just with 15, 16,000 fans in there. So I think it's something where you're seeing that build. And it's not just the Lightning. It's the Bucks won the Super Bowl. The Rays went to the World Series. They're won another boat parade in Tampa in a few days. And that whole place will be jam-packed too. So they've sold out 250 something straight games. So it's been a hockey town for a while now. And now I hope they're understanding, appreciating this might be the golden era of Lightning hockey at this point, with the way these team guys are playing.
It's the city of champions is now Tampa Bay, certainly after the success in the NFL and Major League Baseball. And now, of course, with the Lightning here in the NHL, you know, Joe, Steve Yzerman was the architect for so much of the success of the Lightning, and he built this roster and then obviously went on to Detroit, where he's the GM there now. Julien Brisebois takes over, and it's a seamless transition from the assistant general manager to the general manager seat. Does he get enough credit for the way he's been able to continue to build this team and maintain what Steve Yzerman started all those years ago?
I mean, I think he does locally, at least. I don't know about nationally. And I think people, you know, looked at it like Yzerman built the team, then handed it over to Julien, where in reality it was Yzerman built the team with Julien Brisebois kind of as the right-hand man for 8 years. They did it kind of together. You know, Steve was obviously the vocal point and the GM, and he made the decisions, but it was a collective effort. And so I think when Julien took over, it was just a natural fit. And he put his fingerprints on this team, guys. You know, like you look at the first year of your GM, you win 62 games, tied for like a league record, and you get swept in four games. And you're like, okay, well, this is going to be fun. And then you get all the criticism, and like people are like, fire your coach and blow the core up. They can't win. And the first thing, big decision you do is don't do anything. You say, I'm not going to blow this up. This is a good team. I believe in these guys. I believe in this coaching staff. I just signed the coach to extension a month ago. I would have signed him even if we lost, you know, after this series. And it shows a lot of guts. To use a safer word in this one, to do that. And he stood by his decision, and look what happened the next year. And he had some bold moves at the deadline to get Goodrow and Coleman, who weren't top six guys or weren't the flashy deadline deals, and gave up a couple first round picks and top prospect for him. And they don't win the cup without those deadline with Gunny Gord. So Savard again this year. So I think, you know, obviously it was a team a lot that Steve Yzerman, you know, really was a big part of, but I think, you know, Julien Brisebois put his fingerprints on this one. And, you know, look, you know, in his first, what, three or four years, he might have two cups to his resume. And that's something that, you know, you don't see very often, especially this day and age.
You know, you just mentioned Barclay Goodrow, you know, and Blake Coleman. And I wanted to ask you, it leads next nicely into my next question about UFAs. And obviously, you know, this Stanley Cup final is not over, Joe, but, you know, we're already going to start talking about, you know, pretty soon about, you know, can the Lightning, you know, put together a third Stanley Cup run, right? And I'm not sure if that feedback is me or if you guys are hearing that. There's a plane, I think, going above someone here. But, you know, how many of these UFAs do you think that the Lightning are going to be able to retain? There's obviously, you know, David Savard is another one, but with the limited cap space that the Lightning have, are the Lightning going to be able to, you know, retain more than, you know, one of these UFAs?
That'll be tough. I mean, quite frankly, unless there's some cap cutting moves on the way out, if you trade one of your forwards like Kalorn or Pulock, I think you have to replace him too. So you take $5 million to save and sign Blake Coleman for something. So it'll be tough. Those guys have earned their first bit of security, their first good contract. They won't blow the doors off at all, but I think they'll be highly coveted after people watching these playoff runs. So it'd be hard unless they make some cap-cutting moves. They're already $5 million over with 19 players signed. So I think just keeping as much as they can and having needing some young players like the Matthew Josephs and the Ross Coltons and the Barb Boulets and the Cal Foots to come in and next year be key players, because that's why this is so special. I feel like this is the last day of school, as John Cooper put it, because you don't know who will be back next year.
You know, Joe, got to talk with Steven Stamkos. He didn't have, obviously, a full season with, you know, only, I think, like 37 games in the regular season. But how good has he been for Tampa? And just how much of a feather in his cap for a player who could have been one of those guys who never won the cup, but now is on the, again, on the precipice of winning a second?
Well, I think this could do a lot for his legacy. I mean, he won last year, and he was a part of it, a big part behind the scenes, other than the 2 minutes and 47 seconds that'll forever live in Lightning lore in that shot. But to win it, he played every game in these playoffs, and he's playing hurt and one of the top three or four scorers in this team. And so this will do a lot. I mean, you know, yeah, this team took a lot of hits. He took a lot of hits with him on those years. He wasn't dynamic in the postseason in 15, and he had some struggles in game sevens in 16 and 18. So along with that core, he took a lot of the brunt of that. And so for him to potentially win back-to-back cups and now be healthy or relatively healthy enough to be a full run, this is significant. He's the face of the franchise. He's one of the kind of the guiding lights this whole time. And guys staying, his decision to stay in 2016, the summer, was kind of a catalyst for a lot of this, right? And not leaving, and the whole group kind of stayed together. So I don't think people really understand or appreciate what it takes to go through that many kind of serious injuries, not just come back, but to come back and play at an elite level, which he has. And that's something that I think people don't talk about enough, because mentally and physically, to go through that rehab over and over again, broken leg, torn meniscus, blood clot, core surgery number two, and then whatever he's dealing with now, which we'll find out after the season what exactly has been hurting him. So I think it's, you know, be fitting to see him, you know, obviously hoist the Stanley Cup when they have to get a chance to do that again.
Joe Smith covers the Tampa Bay Lightning for The Athletic. He's about to cover a championship parade again very soon. The Lightning have a 3-0 series lead over the Montreal Canadiens. Look to wrap up and win their second consecutive Stanley Cup on Monday night. Joe, appreciate your time. Appreciate your insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
No problem. Thanks so much for having me, guys. Enjoy the weekend.
Thanks, Joe. Yeah,
there you too. There he goes. Joe Smith joining us. He covers the Tampa Bay Lightning. Let's take our final commercial break. When we come back, we'll talk about some of the trade rumors that are circulating, certainly involving the Winnipeg Jets as well. They're linked to a number of the defensemen that are rumored to be on the block. Much more to come. Much more Jets talk. Much more hockey talk. You're listening. You're watching. You're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live Saturday morning on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. Want to give a big shout out to our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. Rumors is reopening August 24th. That's coming up in about 6 or 7 weeks' time, and they're doing it with a bang. TV's John Doerr, one of the most requested, funniest comedians that grace the stage at Rumors, will be back August 24th through August 28th. Tickets on sale right now. Get them at rumorscomedyclub.com. In order to attend, everybody must be double vaccinated or produce a negative COVID test. So you can be assured you will be in a comfortable, safe environment when Rumors reopens on August 24th. It's been far too long since we've been able to watch some live comedy. So get your tickets now to see John Doerr coming up in August at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Tickets available online at rumorscomedyclub.com. Gentlemen, trade talk heating up, as you would expect. It usually happens this time of year, especially when the Stanley Cup final begins to wind down. We know that the Predators and the Kings made their swap earlier this week for Victor Arvidsson. Our friends at the Fourth Period published a summer trade watch column earlier this week, and they have the Jets linked to three different players who they think might be available. All to no one's surprise, those three different players are all defensemen, them being Matthias Ekholm of the Nashville Predators, Josh Manson of the Anaheim Ducks, and of course, Seth Jones. He's certainly one of the big fish on. Do you think the Jets are going to shore up their blue line through a trade this offseason? And of Ekholm, Jones, or Manson, which one do you think, of any, is most likely to end up here in Winnipeg?
Yeah, the Seth Jones one is really, I mean, it's tough to really imagine the Jets, you know, bringing in a Seth Jones just because of, you know, his current situation, right? Like he's due for a huge contract, and he's coming off of a year in which, like, we've all seen, you know, the analytics community point out, you know, how poor of a season Seth Jones has had. And I think a lot of that had to do with how bad Columbus was this year, right? Like, name me one player on Columbus who had a good year, right? Like, certainly Laine didn't have a good year in Columbus. So Seth Jones is a really interesting one, but if I had to pick which one is most likely to come to Winnipeg, it would probably be, you know, Josh Manson, but I think Matthias Ekholm would be right behind him. The player I like out of those three the most is definitely Ekholm. And it goes back to what we were talking about during the first hour, guys, right? Like, it's almost like we're back to, you know, the trade deadline, and we're talking about, you know, is it going to be Ekholm or Savard, you know, or Josh Manson, right? So there's really, I think, you know, a good chance that, you know, the Jets do address this, you know, via trade. But, you know, when you look at the free agent pool, you know, it's not as sexy maybe as you would like, right? Like Dougie Hamilton, I think, is a long shot to come to Winnipeg, right? So in addition to, you know, Hamilton, you've got, you know, a player like Alec Martinez out there who, you know, I've suggested would look pretty good in a Jets jersey, right? So, you know, I think Jones is an interesting one. I think, you know, Chicago is a team that I think, you know, especially, like, you have to put the pieces together. Dave mentioned, you know, the puzzle pieces. Like, why is Chicago moving Keith out? Well, if they're going to move Keith out, you got to think that they want to replace him, you know, with someone like a Seth Jones or like a Dougie Hamilton, right? That's what I would do is put, if you put two and two together, you know, if you're moving on from Duncan Keith, who's arguably a Hall of Fame defenseman, you know, you're going to have to replace him with someone. And, you know, there are, you know, options in the system for the Hawks, but I would have to think that, you know, Chicago is another team, you know, that's looking to bring in one of these defensemen. I don't know which one, guys, but that would be kind of my logic there. So, yeah, I mean, all three of these guys make sense. Like, Manson improves you on the right side. You know, Ekholm would improve you on the left side. The question is, like, what do you have to give up? And I would imagine that it's going to be more than just a draft pick to get a guy like Ekholm out of Nashville. But as we've seen with the Arvidsson trade, they're clearly looking to move players out. And Nashville could be a team, you know, that maybe they're looking at bringing in, you know, a Dougie Hamilton. I wouldn't put Nashville, you know, at the top of the list, but you have to wonder, you know, what else Nashville is trying to do here.
I don't think Ekholm is realistic anymore, especially after the Arvidsson trade. I mean, I think that Nashville is going to protect Yossi, Ellis, Ekholm, and Dante Fabro on the back end. I think they're going to be one of the few teams that goes with the eight skaters, one goaltender protection list. You look at their forwards, it's not like they have seven forwards that they need to protect. I mean, you got guys who are overpaid in both Matt Duchene and Ryan Johansson, that, you know, they're going to protect those guys. You got a guy like Philip Forsberg they're obviously going to protect. And then after that, it's nobody that you're really, you know, I think, ripping your hair out being afraid to lose. So I think Nashville's going, you know, eight skaters, one defenseman. They're going to protect Ekholm. They're going to keep Ekholm on their team. And it would not surprise, I would be more surprised if Ekholm gets traded than if he signs a contract extension in Nashville, Dave.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm on board, right? I think Ekholm, after what, I think they played the market well. I think they wanted to see what was out there. You know, GMs often do that. They'll use the media to get their message out and take, see if they can. It's just like fishing. You put a lure out there, see what you're going to catch. And if you don't like it, toss it back in. I'll catch and release. And you don't bother having to make the trade. And you can just say, look, it was just speculation, da-da-da-da-da. But to me, like I said, it'll be very interesting to see what this Jets team is able to do. I mean, obviously, a guy like Josh Manson, we don't even know if Winnipeg was on his no-trade list. We're not sure, obviously.
It's safe to assume that the Jets or Winnipeg is on every player's no-trade list.
Well,
that being said, no trades can be waived very easily.
Yeah, no, of course. And it's funny because, like I said, if they do get him and then, of course, you know, bring Dave Manson on to be the new head coach of the Manitoba Moose, my prediction will have come true. So that'll look pretty good. But yes, Jeff, I'm a man of many hats. I'm wearing a Mets hat now. It doesn't matter. I wear all hats, so that doesn't matter. But anyways, so like Josh Manson, obviously, is a guy who's young. He's, you know, brings that physicality that a lot of folks would like to see in the Jets' defensive core. And I think what it ultimately comes down to, guys, and the reason why the Jets are being tagged, regardless of how much veracity is within those rumors, I think what it comes down to is that we know what the Jets have to do this summer is improve their defensive core. And so whether it's through a trade for one of those guys or whether it's bringing in, to Ezzie's point, are you getting a Dougie Hamilton or are you more likely to try and get a David Savard, a guy who's definitely going to improve your top four? This is just a reality of what Kevin Cheveldayoff's summer is going to be like. So I think that to me is the bigger piece. Rumors are great, and you know, you can do all sorts of things, but sometimes it's kind of like throwing a dart at a dartboard and hoping something will stick, right? We don't really know. We within this article, there's nothing that says why Winnipeg is connected, other than you just think maybe this Winnipeg makes sense, right? So, and I've got the article linked in the morning papers on illegalcurve.com for those who didn't get a chance to read it, but. I think what ultimately the crux of it all is just Kevin Cheveldayoff has to do something to address his defense, whether it's through trade, whether it's through free agency.
And boys, I want to go back to Drew asked the question, like which defenseman I thought was more likely to come to Winnipeg. I didn't say that I think Ekholm is coming to Winnipeg imminently.
Oh, right? Of course.
Yeah, wanted to get that out there. Like, I think Manson would be the most likely and Seth Jones would be the least likely. Mm-hmm. I really like Ekholm. Like, that's kind of more so what went into my question, mm-hmm. or pardon me, my answer, the Drew's question, is that in, you know, that run that, you know, in Winnipeg's run in 2018, like Ekholm, he's still one of the top, I think you could argue he's a top 20 defenseman in the NHL. Like, he's a bona fide. I think if the Jets acquire Ekholm, he's your top pair left side defenseman. And I think that's another issue that we maybe have to start talking about more. I think it almost seems sacrilegious for some people to suggest that, you know, Josh Morrissey is more of a second pairing defenseman, but I think his advanced stats might, you know, kind of lean towards, you know, Josh Morrissey being more of a left side second pair defenseman. So I think it's more likely that you're going to see a Jamie Oleksiak type of player, or, you know, Alec Martinez type of player acquired by the Jets, as opposed to, you know, the bigger guys. Like, mm-hmm. the big fish are Dougie Hamilton and Seth Jones, let's be honest here. Yeah. And regardless of
stop you right there. So do you think Seth Jones is going to bounce back on a better team? You mentioned earlier, yep. Ezzie, about, yes. how Columbus struggled as an entire organization last year. So which Seth Jones do you think is the real one? The one that we saw perform so admirably a couple seasons ago, where he looked like he was on the verge of being a Norris caliber defenseman, or the Seth Jones that was really, you know, struggled for the bulk of last year in Columbus?
I think it's the former. I'm not denying the numbers. Like, we all know that the advanced stats were not good for Seth Jones this year, but this is still a guy, you know, that's been a 40 point plus defenseman for many years, and he's still relatively young, right? Like, he's 26 years old. So I'm not saying that, you know, he's the best defenseman in the NHL, but I do think he is a top 20, maybe even top 10 defenseman in the NHL if he's paired, you know, with the right D partner. So I think whoever is going to get him, he'll most likely play, you know, top pairing, at the very least top four role. So it'll be interesting to see where he ends up, because he's clearly not coming back to Columbus.
It's interesting. If you look at wins above replacement for defensemen last year who played at least 400 minutes of even strength time on ice. Duncan Keith, who's been mentioned in trade talks, was absolutely dead last in the NHL at a negative 1.4 wins above replacement. Josh Morrissey was 196th of 198 at negative 1.1 wins above replacement. And Seth Jones was 194th at negative 1 wins above replacement. So, you know, it is interesting that, you know, Seth Jones, I mean, certainly struggled last year. I also point out that both Tucker Pullman and Nathan Beaulieu were towards the bottom of that list as well, which goes to, I think, show about some of the struggles the Jets defense had last year. But, you know, Seth Jones being down that low is very surprising. Morrissey, less surprising because of how we saw him struggle in trying to elevate Tucker Pullman. And I think to bring this whole thing full circle, I wonder what Morrissey's numbers would look like with a guy like Dylan DeMello next to him for the full season, or an improved right side partner, or to Ezzy's point, playing in a second pairing left side role as opposed to a top pairing left side role, because he has certainly struggled in that role ever since Jacob Trouba left to go to New York. So, I mean, it's certainly been a little bit of a broken, a corrupted MP3 file to bring it into the 21st century. But the Jets defense, you know, for a second consecutive offseason is such a position of need that I think it's almost overwhelming everything else to do with the team right now.
Yeah, and I do think that the X factor is Ville Heinola. Like, it seems like we haven't been talking about him a lot. We've been talking about him a little bit in today's show. We were definitely talking about him more, you know, during the series against the Canadians, hoping that he would get into the lineup. But, like, if you think Heinola is going to be a big part of your top six, like, you can only bring in so many defensemen, right? Like, mm-hmm. you don't want to squeeze him out into a situation where he's going to be a regular, healthy scratch. And that's mm-hmm. why I do think that, you know, it's tough to predict what the Jets are going to do either on the left side or the right side, depending on who they keep, right? Because, like, if DeMello's back, he'll be in your top four. We know Pionk's going to be in your top four. And then we expect, you know, Heinola to at the very least be a third pairing defenseman. But then where does that leave Logan Stanley, right? Like, it's very, again, it's, you know, I don't know how many times I can say this. It's just very difficult to predict where the Jets are going to go here in terms of who they bring in, because who does that push out, right? Like, if they bring in another right shot defenseman, that likely means Tucker Pullman's not going to come back, or he's going to be a seventh or eighth defenseman. I don't know if he wants to be that. So Ville Heinola is the big one here. Like, I think Dave would agree, there's a good chance that, you know, what if Heinola is a top four defenseman and he puts up 45 points for the Jets next year? I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility.
That's why I think this next month, Dave, is going to be absolutely so fascinating for the Winnipeg Jets. It's not like it's going to be, I mean, it's going to be over the next, you know, month until the, you know, the last, you know, until free agency starts. What's that, on the 28th of July, if I'm not mistaken? There's so many decisions and so many moving pieces, you know, in a typical offseason, never mind then you factor in an expansion draft as well, then you're going to figure out, you know, when arbitration, if that's going to be a something that the Winnipeg Jets have to get into with Neil Pionk or Andrew Kopp or Logan Stanley, for that matter. It's just really going to be this month of July. There's a reason why we're excited for this month of July, and we already have so many sort of additional shows planned for this month of July and so many special broadcasts planned, is because this Winnipeg Jets team for next season is really going to take shape over the next, you know, next 3.5, next 4 weeks. And then August is going to be very quiet. And then before you know it, training camp is 2 months away. You know, if you think about it, starting right after Labor Day, this next month is going to be fascinating for the Winnipeg Jets, Dave.
Yeah, although Logan Stanley is an arbitration eligible. I just wanted to catch that one. But no, I think, I mean, let's be realistic, boys. Is anybody paying attention to the Stanley Cup? Honestly, like, does anybody care that it's happening? I can only imagine. I mean, the ratings were atrocious last summer, but when it's 26 degrees, or, you know, at night, it 2 in the morning, but, like, it's gorgeous out, I suspect most people are outside enjoying the weather. I'm not saying that people aren't watching it, but I guarantee you the numbers aren't going to look good this year again, which I think is a lesson to the NHL that, you know, maybe ending a little bit earlier, playing a few less games would have been a wise decision. But anyways, that's a digression. That the reality is, this is going to be an incredibly interesting July. I don't think we can emphasize that enough. And to your point, Drew, we've added a number of shows that are going to be taking place. And I'll have those shows in the notes of the morning papers every day, just to give people that idea just to reinforce when we're going to be on and when you can watch those, because you can follow the link, hit the subscribe, and that way it'll, you'll get a reminder when those shows are going live, because it's going to be unbelievable. I really do. And we'll have all the news obviously on illegalcurve.com. But this, I said it when I, my question to Ted, I mean, it was a bit of a statement as well, is that this is, you know, they jokingly, we call it the summer of Chevy. Well, this is his summer. He's got to do something because, Mark's watching Stanley Cup because he's bet money on Tampa Bay. So
beers are on Mark's sports video after Monday, potentially when the Lightning wrap it up, or Wednesday if it goes back to Tampa Bay, however yeah. many more games it's going to be. But beers on Mark.
But anyways, like I said, this is the summer of Kevin Cheveldayoff off, and it's just going to be a big thing, because to what we've talked about, as he's mentioned, I've mentioned it, Drew, you've mentioned it, Ted mentioned it. You just can't have another summer like last where you stand pat and allow nothing really to change significantly. And you just bring, I mean, first of all, the worst thing I think as an organization you can do is bring players in who are going to stunt the growth of your prospect. Because again, that becomes a complete waste of time. David Gustafson watching games, useless. Playing games with the Moose, fine for last year. I didn't have a problem with it. Ville Heinola playing for the Moose. Craig Eisinger came on the show, talked about how Ville Heinola was one of the best players in the American Hockey League, obviously talking about the Canadian division of that. So that's fine. But next year, do you want a player? You need to see what you have in Ville Heinola. I mean, give the kid the full season. If you have to play Ville Heinola and Logan Stanley, I mean, guys, am I the only one who says, like, how many times do I have to hear the regular season doesn't matter because the playoffs are a different animal? So who gives a shit? Let him play the whole regular season then. And if he, the truth is, not the whole regular season, but let him play from the start of the regular season to the trade deadline. And if you don't like what you see at the trade deadline, then make a move. But to not play the kid and not give him the opportunity to be potentially a top four defenseman when it seems like everyone thinks that's what he is, it's lunacy. And so play Josh Morrissey, Ville Heinola, and Logan Stanley if that's what you think will give you the best opportunity. Or bring someone in so you don't have to run both those younger guys. But to me, the Ville Heinola question is just, it just doesn't make any sense anymore at this point. Because if you're going to play him at the AHL level, doesn't really seem like it makes a lot of sense at this point.
And you're not playing with the NHL. He can achieve at the AHL level is your point.
Well, yeah. I mean, again, like I said, I think playing games is better than sitting and watching games. So if that's what ends up happening, better that he should play in the AHL with the Moose than not play with the Jets. But give the kid a chance. If that's what you think, if you think he can be a guy, I mean, guys, we always talk about puck possession, right? The idea of control. Some guys are saying, well, you know, you're going to have too small a defensive core for the playoffs. That could be the truth. Maybe you need to bring guys in, you know, some veteran guys like a David Savard, who we all know is a big boy, can handle himself, clear the front of the net. So that'll give you a little more size on the right side. But if you're in control of the puck, you don't really have to worry about defending because you actually are in, you're playing offense. So we'll see what Ville Heinola is, but you have to give him that opportunity because to not just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, nice little soliloquy from Dave M there. I appreciate that kind of enthusiasm coming from him. Ezzy, we'll let you get the final word in, be it on the Jets or on the Stanley Cup final, because I know you are actually one of the diehards who's watching the Lightning and the Habs and everything else. But before we do so, I want to make mention that soliloquy by Dave was brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and total dedication to client satisfaction. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Ezzy, are you surprised the Lightning have been able to do to the Habs what they've been able to do, and that this cup final has been as one-sided as it has been through the first three games?
Yeah, I've been surprised. And, you know, Dave and I both picked the Canadians in seven and then immediately regretted it after game one. But yeah, I mean, the Lightning are absolutely dominating the Canadians. And I did, you know, kind of really not think that my pick of the Canadians was that good because, I mean, look at even without Alex Killorn, who's a very, you know, important player. I mean, they're still dominating the Canadians, and you know, Kucherov just looks incredible. I mean, Braden Point has looked incredible, but it's not even those guys that have been doing the majority of the damage. In game one, Kucherov was incredible. He had the three assists. But you know, you're getting, you know, winning goals from Blake Coleman. You're getting two goals from Tyler Johnson. You know, yesterday's first goal was from Jan Ruda, right? Like, who expected Jan Ruda to be a guy that, you know, scoring the first goal in that game? And the Canadians just aren't the same team, guys, when they don't score the first goal. Like, we know that they're basically, they have been unbeatable in the playoffs when they score the first goal, and then they basically just ride their incredible defense. But, you know, another thing that we haven't talked a lot about is, you know, Carey Price didn't have a very strong game. Like, the second goal that Victor Hedman scored, I think it was clocked at 99 miles an hour. That's fine, but, you know, that there wasn't a lot of traffic in front of Price, and he probably should have stopped that. So, yeah. You know, Price wasn't his best. And don't get me wrong, Carey Price is a future Hall of Famer, and he is the reason why the Canadians are in the Stanley Cup final. But last night was clearly not his best night. And that's the thing, right? Like, he has to be near perfect for the Canadians to have a chance when the Lightning are healthy. You know, Drew, you mentioned this, you know, when we were previewing the Stanley Cup final last week. Kucherov is key. If Kucherov wasn't healthy, if Kucherov wasn't playing in this series, then I think Montreal would have much more of a chance. But you just go up and down the lineup. I mean, it's just too deep of a team for anybody to handle, not just the Canadians. Like, you know, the Lightning, if Kucherov plays, you know, even half of the season, the Lightning probably win the division as opposed to finishing third and then, and you know, playing Florida in the first round, right? But so
if Kucherov plays half the season, as you got to also remember the number of players they would have had to subtract from their, from their actual roster.
Yeah. No Tyler Johnson, no Alex Killorn for sure. Okay. But yeah, I mean, I'm surprised Tampa Bay's up 3-0, but also not that surprised because they're the best team. They deserve to win the cup. And yes, they probably shouldn't have got away with, you know, the salary cap manipulation, but I go back to, you know, just look at the third pair defense, right? Like Mikhail Sergachev and David Savard is your third pair. On some teams, guys, that's your top pair. Forget second pair. Like Sergachev and Savard are two really good defensemen, right? And so Hedman's been great, scores the goal yesterday. And, you know, it's almost like an unstoppable train. Like, that's what the Lightning are. They're just destined to win their second Stanley Cup in a row. So, yeah, it'll be, you know, fun to watch. Unfortunately, you know, the Habs weren't able to give their fans inside and outside of the building, you know, more to cheer about, even though, you know, it looked like, you know, Nick Suzuki's goal late in the second period gave them some life and it looked like maybe they were going to come back. But yeah, I just think, boys, it's the Lightning's year again this year.
It is no question about that. I'm sort of looking forward to it wrapping up either Monday or, you know, however many more games it takes, because that'll be the trigger when this entire off-season hot stove will really get underway and you'll really see hopefully some moves and some signings and some trades and everything else. The wheeling and dealing, let it begin. The cup final will wrap up this week, and then starting next week, it is full hot season, hot stove for the Winnipeg Jets and all 31, I guess, suppose, with the Kraken teams getting to be underway with their maneuvering. It'll be
fun.
There was
a joke there for you, Drew. Like, you could have, you know, segued and said, you know, it's time for NHL teams to get Kraken or something. I thought you were going to go like all.
I didn't. It would have been a good point. I missed out on that opportunity, but I appreciate you pointing that out there, Mr. Ginsburg. In any event, it will be entertaining. A reminder, we have some bonus broadcasts coming up for you here on the Illegal Curve channel. In addition to all of the Saturday shows, we have a special live broadcast around the NHL expansion draft. We'll have a special live broadcast around the NHL draft day one and day two, of course. And of course, on free agency, we'll do a recap show that first night of free agency, talking about all the moves and hopefully some also made by the Winnipeg Jets. Otherwise, it might be a bit of a dull show. But I think the Jets certainly will be active in some regard between now and throughout the month of July. Want to say thank you to our sponsors. They make this show possible. Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Boston Pizza, and our friends at Seagram's. Support these fine businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. For all of you who joined us in the chat and who are watching the show, thank you so much. On your way out, if you haven't already done so, smash the like button, hit the subscribe button, and that way you'll get alerted each and every time we go live here on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. The man in the top right is Dave Minuk sporting a New York Mets hat. The man in the bottom middle is Ezra Ginsburg supporting a Chicago White Sox hat. I am your host, Drew Mindell, sporting no hat at all and no hair at all. Stay safe, stay hydrated. It's a hot one out there. Get out, enjoy the weather, enjoy your weekend. We'll see you back here, of course, illegalcurve.com. All the latest Winnipeg Jets news that's updated all day long. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download. You can download it on the podcast or watch the live broadcast immediately upon our conclusion. Thanks so much for everybody. If it's Saturday, It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.